for that. Leave that here just in case.
You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Don, you got to be good today with these people, because there's not a lot of information I know about either of them, but they're very interesting people in their own right, and I want you to be productive today.
What up and about?
I want you to think of some questions
I'm going to struggle.
No, well, you struggle all the time. I went to the boxing the other night at Pavilion and saw John Van Wisser. I've been following him a little. He just had his second professional fight. You know who John Van Wisser is?
Yeah, he was on here. He's the long distance swimmer.
That's right.
But he's about 48.
He swam across the English Channel.
How many rounds did he fight?
Well, he knocked out the bloke the shortest time that's ever been recorded at the Pavilion. He knocked him out in 8 seconds.
What, first? You're not serious. In the first round,
you are not,
better than Jimmy
Carruthers. Show, you cannot be serious.
Better than Jimmy Carruthers.
No, he's not better than. He just knocked
Well, Jimmy Carruthers knocked out a bloke in the first.
Well, it doesn't mean.
Vic Towle, I think it was.
Than Jimmy. Anyhow, so I was speaking to John Locko, who's been in before, and he said, these boys here, I can call them boys because be their grandfathers, their identities and stars in their own right. One of them is a man called Anthony.
However you like it, Sammy.
No, I like it how you like
Anthony.
It. Anthony Topic. he's a boxer, and also he's become a fashion model for Versace. Locko tells me, so we'll ask him about that. And the other lad we're speaking to, who has a name in his own right. He's called Jake, but his father was the 5-time world boxing champion, Lester Ellis. He is Jake Ellis. So for a start, welcome to you, Anthony and Jake, and thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Sam and Don, and pleasure being here, mate.
So you two actually box?
I've had a couple of fights, thanks to Jake. Yep. So,
No, because you're not marked or anything along that line.
Well,
so
the Ellis family teach you how to move your head and punch hard. So,
well, I was taught boxing by a fellow called Billy Rainsbury, who was a technician, and I think a lot of blokes are not taught properly to box, and that's why I'm asking to.
Well, and this is not your fault, Don, because I didn't give you the information, but Jake, along with his father Lester, is part of a boxing academy, if you like, and he might explain just what you do, and I've said you are the youngest promoter of celebrity boxing in Australia at 18, and you have the online cards. So anyhow, we'll get to that. Just tell us, in answer to Don's question, what you do. You have a boxing academy called, I've seen it there at the
Team Ellis. That's the one, mate. Well, since I was a kid, 11 years old, I had my first fight at 38 kilos as an amateur boxer, and
38
kilos. Yeah. How old were you?
I was 12.
Oh, it's gone. That's
yes.
All right.
Yes. So but all my cousins box. So every male Alice has had a boxing fight. So all my cousins and,
Where's Keith fit into this?
He's my uncle. So he was our trainer.
His children or?
Children have had fights. Yep. Yeah. And also my father's other brother, his kids had fights, and as well as my dad's other stepbrother, all their kids have had boxing fights too. Mm. So it was sort of in the culture. None of us played any other sports. We just boxed. I did play footy as a kid for a year for Sydenham Sharks, but boxing was always the number one. And I had dozens of amateur fights, depending on which cousin you look at, but my cousin Heath Ellis was probably the most successful. He ended up with about 25 pro fights. I only had a couple, but since I was 18 years old, I started promoting professional boxing. I started up in the Sunshine Rollerblading Rink, and we were getting a couple hundred people, and I just basically done it because I loved it, and I was just having a crack at it, try to box and promote at the same time. And Mate, yeah, and then sort of one thing led to another, and then eventually I just started, you know, the promotion started started dominating more over the boxing itself, and yeah, now we're here today. We have majority of the registered professional boxers in Victoria signed to us, and when I say a majority, I mean a vast majority. There's only three boxing promoters in the state that do professional boxing, and we have probably 80% of the registered Victorian boxers signed to
us. How popular is boxing at the moment? Because we listened to it as, well, I certainly did as a kid. You know, Festival Hall was a place and it was broadcast, Ron Casey. Mm-hmm. Then on television there was a show and your father fought on that show called TV Ringside. Yeah. And it really did promote. But I think the halcyon days of boxing was in the 20s, 30s, 40s, maybe the 50s in Australia. You know, Australia was struggling. It seems to go better in lower socio-economic countries. Am I right or wrong in that observation?
Mate. Well, my dad always says, like, there's a big difference between a fighter that's fighting to eat and a fighter that's fighting for some credit or some notoriety. But to be honest with you, I think even like, because I actually heard a little fun fact, and I don't know, I'm pretty sure it is true, and that it was in the 70s, your average four-round boxer would get paid more than your average AFL player. And a four-round boxer, like, that's probably one of the, like, that's an entry level, you know, that's basically as low as you sort of can get. Four rounds, you can't really get much lower than that. And, you know, I think, you know, I don't know about the, you know, before that, the 20s, 30s or 40s or whatnot, but I think like that's the last sort of, you know, I guess heyday of the sport in this country. And, but I did, like, I've been promoting professional boxing since 2011. And I've seen a massive resurgence in about 2017 when Jeff Horn beat Manny Pacquiao. And so yep. I own a gym. I do the professional boxing. I also do the amateur boxing, which is like the corporate celebrity events. And over all three businesses, I seen a massive jump, like whether it's ticket
sales. Just to explain, can I ask you, corporate, so what did you call
it? Yep, celebrity corporate boxing.
What's that?
So for example, in May, I got Clay Smith from the Western Bulldogs.
Who
boxing.
I mentioned that, Don. I mentioned that before.
Oh, yeah. Sonny Boy Williams fighting Barry.
Yeah.
What do you think of...
Asked him one question. Yeah, okay, let him answer it.
So yeah.
I mentioned that he fought the Western Bulldogs and the Carlton.
Shut up,
Don and Jake.
Shit, you asked. Let him answer it.
Fuck. Yeah. So basically, you know, the twins from the block, the Packnum twins, like Luke and Josh Packnum. They're on the block, they're on Love Island, on The Bachelor. No. Well, he's boxing Clay Smith from the Western Bulldogs as the main event in our next promotion in on May.
May 14th.
So basically we get these guys from different sports or influencers like YouTubers or reality TV stars, and we get them to have boxing fights. And underneath that, we have an additional sort of 60 people having what we call the undercard, and they come from all different sports and walks of life as well. And then we have the main six fights, so the main 12 fighters are influencers, so they have to have a following of some type.
So do you do pensioner boxing? Don and I might
why not?
Trade off. Stick it up your
now, flag. Don, that's Jake. We'll come back to Jake. But don't forget, Antoni Topic is sitting here, and Antoni Topic, Antoni, you have fought twice, and you've been on, we'll get on to Survivor, and then we'll get on to the Versace.
What do you do for Versace?
Versace? Well, I've got a request booking in Milan at the moment. So
we're
just trying to work out the finances, you know what I mean?
Did you get approached by the Versace clothing caravan, if you like, empire, to go over to Italy and model clothes? Seriously, you're telling me that?
Yeah. So
where did they get hold of you?
So I've got an agent in Milan. Ooh, so
have you?
Yeah. So they
Is this runway or photographic?
Well, a bit of both. Whatever.
What's your life expectancy? Do you reckon in that?
I guess as soon as you kind of hit like your early 30s, you're thinking my time's kind of up. You know, as soon as you get one or two grey hairs, you're like, oh god. I don't know where this is
so
going.
So people can't see you, Antoni, but you're heavily inked up.
Yeah, I've got a lot of tattoos.
Yeah, so from your just neck down, I can't see the rest of your torso, but is it all over? And was that a contributing factor to the fact that they wanted you, that you're a new age person plenty of ink?
Yeah, when I started, it was kind of a deterrent for modeling, I guess. You know, they kind of
a deterrent?
Yeah, they kind of wanted you to be like clean. A clean canvas, you know.
Yep.
But I never wanted to be normal in life and always wanted to be different. So started getting tattoos. Mum and dad hated it, but the industry kind of didn't mind it because you're one of the people who have tattoos and a certain brand will
so
like
you're
that.
Saying industry, so obviously you're into it here, are you?
You've
done a bit here in Australia.
Yeah, I've done, you know, fashion shows, you know, Melbourne Fashion Week and all that sort of stuff. I've worked for GQ, opened and closed it here, like worked for Calibre.
GQ?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gentleman's Quarterly, is that what that means? Yeah.
Yep.
That photographer, have you got that? I've bought a book, this guy goes around the world taking random photographs of the way people are dressed.
Yeah.
Do you know that from a photographer from New York?
No.
And he gets guys like you, you know, because you're unique and just snaps you what you're wearing.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Love that. I haven't seen him, but sounds like an awesome idea.
And Topic is your proper name?
Yeah, that's
not
my last name.
Not a stage name? Yeah, that's it.
That's my last name. It's a Croatian name. Last name,
well,
Sammy.
Yeah, it's good. I like
Croatian?
It.
Yes.
You're mad.
Oh, no.
He'd be off his head, wouldn't he?
Oh, yeah.
We're an emotional...
He's actually pretty level-headed, actually.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've been hanging out with the Alices my whole life, so they put me in line, you know.
Yeah, now we're going to jump round to both of you, so we're just now back to you, Jake. How did you get into promoting? That's just. Do you have any business experience, or did you have to learn it off the seat of your pants? Or
yeah, mate, just on the job, you know.
Because
I finished year 12, and within 3 months, I'd done my first show. I was just a bit naive, and I just thought, you know, I'll just throw myself at it. At the fresh age of 18, and at the time, the next youngest boxing promoter in the country was 27 years older than me.
And you're 27 now, are you?
I'm 29 now.
29.
Yes. Then. Yep.
So, Jake, there's some pretty heavy hitters in the boxing promotion, in the boxing game, mm-hmm. for all sorts of different reasons. You have no problem with any of that? You can.
I definitely had some problems at the start. You know, it was definitely not easy. My first year promoting, I was down, I think, about $35,000. And at the time, like, I didn't have more than, like, $1,000 to my name. And my mum and dad, they weren't, you know, really well off either. Like, my dad went bankrupt when I was a kid. So, you know, we grew up in a part of Melbourne, Victoria, called St Albans, and, you know, pretty rough area and whatnot. But, you know, I just sort of, like I said, I was just so inspired and probably a bit of naivety as well. I just sort of jumped straight at it
now,
and had a go.
You know? Don't take offence at this question, Jake, because I'm not meaning you.
Yeah.
But people who are people, it's a money thing, so... I would assume that when people are going a bit dusty and want to try and shore up the coffers a bit, that they start rigging fights and asking people to take a dive, and betting comes into it. Do you know that goes on in your industry, and how do you steer clear of the urges?
I mean, it's hard because it's a two-horse race, you know. Like, at the end of the day, if one fighter decides to do something like that, they can go put some money on themselves. And I mean, no one will really ever know. Like, they just got to, you know, get hit and go down for, you know, 8-9 seconds, and that'll do it. But like, in the industry, I've probably heard of it in the last 11 years twice, where it was once just suspected, and another time it was sort of obvious, and the whole crowd sort of knew that, you know, this girl was going to go and, you know, beat this other girl. Mm. And it was really just sort of like a bit of a movie. Like, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't sold to the public like some type of, you know, and it was just in a back hall somewhere with about 600 people. But outside of that, I've never heard or seen or anything like any type of fixing or anything
no
like that.
No promoters suggesting that someone take a fall and well, be quit in it for you?
Well, you're actually ironically talking about Sonny Bill. Like, you obviously seen what happened with him, like, you know, 5-6 years ago. We're at the airport. His opponent's team come out and said they got offered, but they refused it. So, you know, I mean, that was like one of the only times I've ever heard it publicly be brought up. And, you know, I mean, it just, I don't know. I don't think it's... you know, it's a sport that where there is no scripts. So, you know, you do what you can, you pull all the one percenters for your boy or whatnot. But ultimately, you can't, you know, work out the outcome before it happens. You know, it's just something that me personally, it's never crossed my mind. And I don't know, like my friend Brian Armatruder, who also promotes at the Melbourne Pavilion, you know, he'd never think to do anything like that too. No. So, you know, I think it's really blown up out of proportion. I think we got a bad rap in it in the media, in the whole, you know, boxing in itself. Like, in the early 80s, it basically got, you know, outlawed by the government, and, you know, all the days of ringside TV and all network TV supporting us was pretty much, you know, out the window. So, you know, I just think, you know, it's that small, tight-knit of an industry where that sort of stuff, there's just really no room for it. And if it does happen the odd time, the media will grab it, run with it, or, you know, if there's any, you know, I guess, issues with, I guess, the underworld or anything like that, they'll grab that, run with that. And even that these days, it's virtually non-existent. You know, there's that little involvement with, you know, that type of stuff.
And you can't afford to do it, because if they followed the paper trail or the money trail and it got back to you, then that's your out of business.
Or may actually the Victorian police year in, year out make it tougher and tougher because of some of the characters in the sport. And, you know, it's at a point now that if you have any type of criminal record, you can never promote. Like anything, like you could just, it's like a teacher, like you could get in a fight,
yep,
you know, or something like that, and you'll never be able to promote again just because of, you know, it seems like every other year the Victorian Sports Board come out, you know, basically blaming Victorian police or some type of politician or some type of legislation that's come through that's made it even tougher to promote boxing. And that's why there's only three of us in the whole state.
The third one is that I used to watch it on Channel 31.
Peter Matiadis?
Peter Matiadis.
He's packed it up pretty much.
Has he really?
Yeah, well, he hasn't really done his own promotion. He'll get involved, I believe. He does a little bit of managing
well.
And that sort of stuff. But he doesn't do his own promotions anymore. Like he started, I believe, in 99 and finished up sort of, I'd say 2016-ish, something like that. But he still attaches himself to certain promotions.
He had the Malvern Town Hall.
Malvern, yep. That's where I boxed. I actually had my professional fights under Peter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yep.
So what I was just going to go on and lead to, and this is something I don't understand, why are there different camps in boxing as to what title, what is it, WBA?
Oh, you're saying sanctioning bodies?
Yeah.
The different sanctioning bodies?
Yes.
Yeah,
why?
Well, basically, the issue was originally, like in Lionel Rose's days back then, and there was only one world title in every division.
Yes.
The problem with that is there'd be guys having their whole career in the top 10 or in the top 5 and never getting a shot at the world title.
Why?
Because the world champion would only box twice a year, once a year, because they're having 15-round fights. So, and even these days, if you're a 12-round fighter, you'd be lucky to box twice a year because it's strenuous on the body, you know?
Oh,
so
yeah, okay, got it.
So in turn, the different sanctioning bodies came out. So the WBC, the WBA was the oldest, then the WBC, then the IBF. And
But wouldn't you work your way up if you were number 6 or 7, you'd fight 5 and then you'd go up and then you'd have to have you'd earn the right to become number 1, 2 or the challenger,
yep,
and then you'd fight number 1. Wouldn't
that
be the way?
If they only fight twice a year.
Yeah, well, that's you work your way up to fight this.
But the
champion
way it works is, so if you're a champion, you have to fight someone in the top 3 for one fight, and then your next fight you can fight someone in the top 15. So the problem is with it, even if you get number 1, so my dad was number 1 in the world for the WBC for 24 months and never got a shot. That's Jeff Phoenix's belt, the green belt that he wears.
I was just watching him today on Fox in 1986, I think, fighting a bloke challenged him. I can't think of the bloke's name. I was just watching him today.
Yeah, so you know that green belt, my dad was the number 1 in the world for that belt for 24 months, 2 years. And mind you, if you lose one fight, you're not number 1 anymore. You go straight to number 7. So then you've got to work your way back. That takes years. So it's extremely unforgiving sport, and it's, again, like you might be aligned with this promotional company, with this network, and they don't want, and the challenger is aligned with another network or signed to, say, like a big casino where he has to fight in that venue or whatever it might be, and it makes it virtually impossible to make a fight. So that's why you got all these different promotional companies, whereas something like the MMA, they've got the UFC and they've got a full monopoly. So you have to fight who Dana White tells you to fight. Whereas in boxing, there's all little fractioned promotional companies, and that's the problem.
Now, Antoni, are you serious about the boxing, or is it a pastime, or do you or is the going to Milan and wandering around with all the hoi polloi around there, is that the main aim of your career?
Well, it used to be, I guess. Like, fashion for me kind of taught me a lot. You know, I was travelling a lot around the world and stuff.
Were
like
you?
That. Yeah.
Modelling or promoting?
Modelling.
Jesus.
So, yeah, from about 22, I was travelling the world, man. So.
And you have an agent in overseas?
Yeah, we've got an agency overseas. I've got an agency in America.
And how did they pick you out of 23 million other Australians? Why did they pick you out? Because they saw you in the ring or what?
No, you send them.
You're a good looking rooster, or how did they do it? Or you got a good physique? How did they get onto you?
You send them like digitals, which are clean photos of yourself without a shirt on. You know, a couple of photo shoots that I've done before, you send it through to them. And they'll sign you up. And if they sign you up, you've got the right to go over.
So, where have you worked overseas?
Milan, LA, obviously Australia, England. I was supposed to go to Paris, didn't go. They wanted me to get down to about 65 kilos. I'm 6 foot two. I can only get down to, what do I get down for my fight?
Probably like 71.
71. Can't really go under that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pretty much that, yeah.
So they're looking, what, for skinny models just like they are in with France, the women?
Yeah, well, yeah, especially with the women. Like, you need to be like a size zero.
Yeah, but men, I'm saying, is it similar to the women? Men have got to get down.
Yeah, sometimes. It just depends where you are. Milan, you have to be a lot skinnier. Like, my physique, about 73 kilos is perfect. For France, you need to be like 65 kilos, 60 to 65 kilos, and be like 6 foot one.
Which is the industry strong, or is it still fast? Is fast fashion the go now, or is it more of a classical look? Is a classical look still in, you know, for shows and whatever else?
Look, I feel like the classical look is still there for your 30-plus-year-olds, because as soon as you pass a certain age, you get different types of jobs. Like, I'll never get a job for, like, Boohoo, which is, like, a fast-selling, you know, fashion label. I'd more be interested in like your higher end brands like Bally, Jimmy Choo. I've worked for Jimmy Choo as well. You know, Porsche, Ferrari, brands like that where they need like an older gentleman to sell that product. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And you've some of the stories about it all. Any interesting things that happen in the catwalk or behind the scenes, or and you do it mixed company with the women as well.
Yeah. I was doing a massive runway.
Anthony, we want to know all that, please.
Well, some stuff I don't know if I'm allowed to say on this podcast.
You say whatever you like, mate.
But yeah, I was doing a massive runway in Italy, and. As I'm about to go out, there's all these obviously good-looking guys and girls and stuff, and I'm literally about to open it. And the guy walked up to me and he goes, just don't trip. And I'm like, I'm just about to walk in front of like 500 people, you know? Like,
is this the promoter or another fellow?
Another
guy.
Don't
trip.
He's just putting the shits up here.
Yeah, he's just trying to get me uneasy. And I'm like, what the hell? Like,
there's competition amongst you guys.
100% there's competition.
Why?
I don't know, mate. Like, it's a weirdest thing.
Well, yes, you do. You're in it. Do you psych one another out or something?
Well, I guess so. Like, if you're the top dog in any industry, people are going to come for you, aren't they? So I feel
like. Are you a top dog?
I feel like, yeah, I feel like I am definitely in Australia overseas. I'm not quite sure because I haven't gone in about 3 years because of COVID. But, I kind of just pick my own jobs and work for the brands that I want to work for rather than doing the jobs that are just thrown your way, because a lot of the younger guys now are just taking anything for any type of money, and I just don't find.
And do you get propositioned by men and women alike?
Oh, yeah, both. I've had a bit of everything. I haven't told Jakey this one, but...
Well, tell us, please, Anthony.
I was in Milan one weekend, and a lady that I've obviously slept with flew me over from Milan to London for the weekend. I ended up going over and then did a fashion show on the Sunday. So, yeah, it was quite an interesting...
The lady you slept with was a model.
No, promoter.
No, she was a little bit of an older woman who was very good looking. Had a bit of money.
So, how many fights have you had?
I've had a few backyard fights, but a couple amateur fights.
And what, are you going to continue fighting, or is that it?
Well, I guess, you know, like if I get a bit of a following from a TV show I just filmed, I think, I'd be open to fighting, you know, on a
is
big
that
celebrity card or something like that.
No.
I'm not allowed to say Sammy yet. It's strictly under wraps. It's not Survivor, no.
So you filmed a TV show that is about to be released onto the market and no one knows what it is.
No one knows what it is yet. We're not allowed to say. And
is this celebrity-based?
It's like influencer-based type.
I see.
And Anthony, he's actually our celebrity matchmaker. So he's the bloke that organises all the celebrities on the corporate show. So for the last two or three corporate shows, like I said, we've had about a dozen influencers, and all of which came from from topic.
Influencers, I don't know.
Yeah, so influencers are basically like anyone with a big following online. So you could, you know, you could maybe just take photos and get a big following that way. You could be like a YouTuber. You could be like a pretty much anything. You could, and if you've got a big following online, you're known as an influencer.
So basically, these celebrity influencers could fight, can they?
Well, some can, surprisingly, but some can't. So it just depends, you know.
It's about like, matching them up accordingly. Yeah, you know.
You usually match them by temperament. Like, you kind of have a few chats with them, kind of see what
they only really
before.
Have like a 10, 12 week window where they can train. So it's not like we train them for
and
like
how many rounds they do?
They only box three rounds, three ones. Like, three it's ones, safe, yeah. Big head guards, 16 ounce gloves, which is double the size compared to the pros. Out of 100 fights, you're lucky to see one knockout.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I've been
very
watching brutal. YouTube. Have you guys watched that fight that looks like it's. It's wild stuff from America where they just seem to come off the street, throw these haymakers, can't fight.
Street beefs?
Cannot,
is it called?
What is it called?
Street beefs.
Oh, shit.
And they fight in the backyard.
They can't fight at all.
Well, we that's actually funny. We do that pretty much every getaway we've ever had for since we were like 18. We set up a ring in the back. So we'll watch like a big fight. We'll go away for a weekend and all the boys will have little like spars at the back and stuff. And we've been doing that.
Backyard spars.
For 10 years, 11 years since we've been adults.
No,
you know,
you're not allowed to wear a head guard, no mouth guard and no shoes.
Dana or Dana... The MMC.
Dana White. Yep.
He's taken it to the next level, hasn't he? Because boxing used to be. Now that's just. I keep marvelling at how that's allowed to be a sport.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, I missed that. Who's Dana White?
He's mixed martial arts. He's the UFC cage fighting. UFC? Yeah. Or no, is that a Kentucky Fried? No, KFC. UFC. Yeah. He's a cage fighting, and we often say, how is that allowed to be a sport? People built, and the women built the living suitcase out of another. If that doesn't give youth the wrong idea about what's going on in the world, but I mean, that sounds pretty noble, doesn't it, to say all that? But shit, it's an amazing sport.
It wasn't allowed,
which I can't stop watching.
Yeah, it wasn't allowed. Yeah, in Victoria for many years. Yeah, you know, just a cage period wasn't allowed. But Dana, mate, he's a legend in his own right because he started from the boxing. Yeah. So he actually was like Floyd Mayweather's bag holder and stuff, and then he basically got onto the MMA, and which was a dying sport. It wasn't even really existent. Let's be honest, it wasn't. Yeah. It was dying. You can't die if it was never alive. But slowly but surely, he's grinded it up to, you know, I think. I know it was the fastest growing sport for many years and now one of the biggest sports.
Yeah.
And the smartest thing they ever done with that was sign it with William Morris Endeavour, who's actually signs my older brother, Lester Ellis Jr. And they're like an acting, they've got...
Leonardo DiCaprio, Margot Robbie.
Some of the biggest actors in the world. Yeah. And basically they understand the marketing structure behind it all. And they've basically taken the UFC to a completely different level with their whole expertise on marketing.
So do you get to, Jake, do you get to promote, you don't promote fights internationally because that's, you only do it here. And but if you had in your stable, or I don't know if in your stable, if you had someone that was worthy to promote overseas, do you deal with people like Don King and actually?
Don King's pretty much expired. Like he's not really involved in it much anymore. Bob Arum is, and he's 90 and he gets like, he's at every presser. He's awesome. And obviously he's, you know, he promoted George Foreman, Muhammad Ali, and he's still promoting to this day.
Is he?
Yes, he is. So, you know, but it's not that I have much dealings with them. I've never had a fighter that's sort of good enough to go to America and do like what George Kambosos did. But, you know, I've had guys that fought, you know, Jeff Phoenix, Brock Jarvis, like for the Australian title.
Yeah,
I had the other kid, Mark Schliebs. We fought Tim Zhu with Dwight Ritchie about 3-4 fights ago. So, you know, we are sort of at that. We have had kids at that top Australian level, but the only international involvement I've got is I was one of the first promoters signed to Pro Bellum, which is the biggest boxing entity in the world, operating over 50 countries. And they've signed guys like Richard Schaefer, who's the CEO of Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, Shane Mosley, those types of guys, and Louis DiBella, who's actually George Kambosos' promoter. So they're all signed to Pro Bellum, and I was one of the first promoters to be signed to them. And so we sort of do our events in like conjunction with them. And we have for pretty much for the last two or three shows.
And just you mentioned Tim Zhu. I know absolutely nothing about boxing except I love watching it. He's going to be a world champion, that boy, isn't he?
It looks like it, mate. It really does. His next fight's a real tough one. He's fighting in the States next up. And then after that, what we call an eliminator, which is like a world title eliminator. If you win that, you're pretty much all but guaranteed a fight with the world champion next up, which is, I believe, it's out of that Charlo or... what's that Brazilian's name? Is it Castano?
Castano,
yep. So it's the winner out of them two. So they're going to fight for the world title. They fought before, got a draw. And with the draw, the champion retains his world title.
Yeah.
And they rematch. And basically, Tim Zhu's right up there on the verge of breaking through for that world title shot. But he's still got a long way to go. The one that is mind-blowing is George Kambosos from Sydney. He just won every world title beating...
Is he a boxer or a fighter?
Boxer. He's on his toes.
He's a boxer, is
yep,
he?
Yep. But he just fought a guy named Teofimo Lopez. And that kid was like 20-0, 16-17 knockouts, something like that, in Brooklyn, in his hometown. And George Kambosos just went and...
And where's George from?
He's from Sydney.
He's been in America for a while, mate. He's
yeah.
been in America.
He was sparring with Pacquiao's camp like 3 years
and
ago.
And what's impressive about him is his last three fights, he's travelled. So, like, he'll go fight, you know, in London and fight one of the homeboys from there. Then he'd go to, like, you know, America, and he'd actually leave Australia, which is a lot harder to do. And to go beat a world champion, but not only a world champion, an undisputed world champion, which means he has every belt that we were talking about before, every sanctioned body, and beat the world champ in Brooklyn. That's mind-blowing stuff, mate. We've never done that in Australia before.
What about your welfare as far as boxers go? Is there a time limit put on you? Because, you know, admittedly, the guys that have gone before you, you know, even the bloke that taught me, he was a little bit scrambled.
Yeah.
So you know, and they take a bit of a punishment.
Do they take into account your mental acuity? Is there ever a test to say, we just don't think you're sharp enough to keep doing this because you're going to do yourself harm, or is it just left entirely up to the boxer?
Well, majority left up to the boxer. However, there is the Victorian Sports, Victorian Combat Sports Board that you know, have their medical requirements for pretty much every 6 months of you being a registered boxer. You've got to undergo you know, medical procedures, things like blood tests, certificate of fitnesses, even MRIs if you're starting to slur your words or something like that. But you know, it's mainly up to the boxer, and that's the thing. Like, I think boxing and horse racing are the only two sports that are left that are just run by the government, you know. And that's sort of, it's a little bit, you know, we are sort of at their mercy, whatever they say sort of goes. But in saying that as well, things tend to be let through that, you know, only a receptionist would allow, like any boxer man wouldn't allow that. And unfortunately, the board is getting filled up with receptionists as opposed to boxing people, which, you know, allows, you know, things like, you know, it's quite easy to exploit, you know, in some ways. That lack of knowledge, you know, by them, the guys making the rules and having such a lack of knowledge, you know, does hurt the sport in more ways than one, I can tell you that.
So you mentioned, we mentioned the George...
Kambosos,
yeah, and he was an undisputed title holder. Is that mean serious money to him?
Millions every fight now.
Is it? Yeah.
So per fight, he'd get...
He is seriously set in the upper bracket.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But, you know, he probably wouldn't have got, you know, ridiculous money to win it. I'd imagine it'd be close to $1 million to fight for it as a challenger, maybe, you know, high couple of hundred thousands, like high six figures. But now I think he'd be guaranteed a minimum of sort of 2 to 4 million.
Really?
In his next fights in Australia. They were trying to get Vasily Lomachenko. Unfortunately, he's a Ukrainian, so he's stuck over there.
Oh, yeah.
So now they're bringing out Devin Haney, the American, who, again, these guys are superstars. So, you know, I'd imagine he'd get at least a couple of million, and I could almost guarantee
in Australia.
In Australia, yep.
Absolutely. That all goes on Main Event?
It could go on Main Event these days. You know, network TV is dying, so not many people are sort of going towards that way. It's more streaming services. There's things like Stan Sports, which are doing the Sonny Bill Barry Hall fight tonight. The biggest one is DAZN, DAZN.
You've
heard of that. The streaming services is what everyone's trying to go for at the moment. Network TV, things like Fox Sports, and like even Channel 9 was doing the footy fight nights.
Yep.
And, mate, they're flopping. You know, like we could get those types of numbers on a stream that we just made ourselves and just charge $25 a stream for, which is sort of what we do. We did that on the weekend.
Yep.
And, you know, we get really, really good numbers, you know.
Do the boxers, are you finding once they reach, say, a title or something, they go down the other end, they're not as hungry Is that still prevalent, or are they a little more switched on? You're saying they,
well these days, it's like back in the day, boxers used to identify as fighters. These days, boxers identify as athletes. So it's a very different mentality. So it sort of depends on which era you're sort of talking about. But
I'm talking about what we're saying
right now. Yeah, well, Marvin Hagler said it. You know, it's very hard to get up and do your road work when you're going to bed in silk pajamas. You know, if you're spoiled, you know, you got money, why would you want to fight?
Like, just vanity, though. They just want to keep the vanity, so they'd want to.
Yes. Yeah. So you sort of got to have a little bit of grit, you know, I suppose, an element of, I wouldn't say anger, but a little bit of resentment. Yeah, that does help. Yeah, it does help, especially like if you've been blueing for half an hour, your face is falling apart, you know, you've got broken ribs, broken hands. To keep continuing with that fight, you can't have millions of dollars in the bank, have a Ferrari, have a beautiful family. Like, why would you do that to yourself? Mm. You know, you got to come from a different, you know, cloth to really be able to, you know, do something like that.
Now, Antoni, Loco tells me, it says, have you been on Survivor?
No, you haven't been on Survivor. It's a mixture of like a couple of TV
shows. Oh, is this
the
thing that we're not allowed to talk about? Yeah. I beg your pardon. I see. I thought he said that.
So when is this coming out?
I think it's coming out later in the year. Like,
and August, how did you September. Get involved in it?
Mate, I was...
Through the Daily Mail, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's through the Daily Mail, because we work with Daily Mail quite heavily for our celebrity shows.
What's Daily Mail? Sorry.
It's like a newspaper.
Yeah, like a newspaper, online newspaper.
Media organisation.
Yeah.
We sued them, Don.
Yeah, but there you go.
No,
yeah,
only because they printed something. Them, yeah. No, only because they printed something about us.
So anyway,
I'll have a chat with him, Sam.
No, that's all right. No.
So what? There's an ad in this paper.
The guy who pretty much does the journalism for him, he gave me a call and he's like, "Look, I think you'd be perfect for this. I know the producer of this TV show, and would you be keen on doing it?" And I just looked at Jake and I'm like, "This is not my type of thing. Like, I should have probably done this about 5 years ago when I was modeling heavy." But yeah, we had a show coming up and stuff like that.
Now, so
like,
a show coming up, what, a boxing show?
The boxing show, yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to go. And he's like, nah, you got to go. You know, it's good for your image.
No, we're definitely not asking.
So are they, what is it, a mixture of sportsmen, or are they all?
We're definitely not asking you to give it away, Antoni, but we want to know, as Don said, is it celebrities pitted against one another in a form of competition of some sort, or is it
like
men and women, or is it just men, or is it...
It's made of men and women, and you guys are, you know, doing challenges and stuff like that, but at the same time... Like,
so what was your attraction to it, exposure or money?
The exposure, definitely. Definitely the exposure.
Because I brought up before, in our previous episode, about why notable celebrities such as in football, Wayne Carey went on.
On SAS, he was on SAS,
Oh, I don't know. You know, Sam Burgess, and they spill their guts, you know.
Yeah. Well, that would be for money. SAS are the best paying reality TV show. Yeah. So what they did was the best paying reality TV show there is. So when I say there is, I mean...
So they get the money in their ass to perform.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I've heard the money that they've been offered, and it's good money. Like, it's well into the six figures.
It is obviously
it's
very dangerous.
So it's not long. It's not illegated. Like, and it's like Love Island and stuff like that, Big Brother, they don't get anywhere near the amount
of
money.
I'm a celebrity.
Or maybe I'm a celebrity. Probably they might get paid quite well because they're already, you know, I don't know much about that. But SAS, I know for a fact, they pay them very well. Because we actually, Michael Zrafa was just on with Wayne Carey and Barry Hall. And
we've spoken to Michael.
We trained him to knock out Anthony Mundine, which is ironic because Anthony Mundine retired my dad. And then Michael Zrafa turned pro under me at 18, and I was 18 too. And then he came back and retired Mundine. So it's actually like a big cycle of, you know, I guess.
We spoke to Michael. I think Mick Gatto organised us to speak to Michael Zrafa. I think that's right, Don, because there was some controversy at the time. Either he didn't fight, was it Tim Zhu?
Yeah,
he either didn't fight him or Tim didn't fight him.
Well, they said he pulled out, but it wasn't him. Like,
no.
The team and stuff, they were struggling with Corona, and it was basically a Corona.
That's right.
Problem.
That's exactly right.
And
it was Corona.
I feel sorry for Michael because, mate, he's a warrior. Like, he's fought in New York, he's fought in London, he's fought in Russia, and again, he turned pro under us. So I've known him from day one. And mate, he's a warrior. He ain't worrying about Tim Zhu. Yeah, no. He ain't worrying about anyone. Like, he's a fighter. He'll fight. You know, and it was. hundreds of thousands of dollars. So, you know, to see him get slayed online the way he has and called a coward, a dog, like, it's, I don't know, mate. It breaks my heart to see, because he is a
warrior.
Fighters
like him don't deserve that, because literally the hardest work I've ever seen.
I've never seen anyone train like him. Like, this, we were supposed to fight Mundine on 90 days, and we end up training for nearly 18 months because of the corona. Because of the corona, we couldn't get an event together. So he was training twice a day for nearly a year and a half of that fight at our gym, at Team Ellis Gym. And, mate, like, the dedication on the bloke and the discipline, mate, most people would dream to have that, you know? And I'm talking lesser men that are jumping online, absolutely slaying him. And, you know, it's just sad to see, but the bottom line was, you know, he didn't fight Tim Zhu. I think he eventually will. He's fighting Isaac Hardman next. And if he gets a good win there and Tim gets a win, maybe that fight can, you know, maybe Tim wins a world title, brings it back to Australia. And it's a great defense against someone like a Michael Zarafa, where it's a, you know, a local showdown. And, but yeah, all in all, it was just really sad to see the way he was treated by, just because he pulled out of one fight, which wasn't even his fault. His team pulled out, not even him.
So that's right. I remember that. They couldn't bring his corner or his team down, and this, because they were restricted from some COVID. That's right. It wasn't his fault.
It was some drama like that. Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of it all, but yeah, it was just sad to see how everyone jumped. Like, people love bad news, you know what I mean? These trolls online, they just see a little bit of drama and they'll jump on it, and, you know, and I mean, it's just that online bullying stuff. Like, we've seen it with Taylor Harris, because Taylor Harris, she boxes at our gym too. And she actually won her Australian title on my event. And you've seen her, like, when, you know, that photo came out with her, like, basically it looked like a karate kick, but it was obviously a football. She was kicking a football. And they just give it to her as well. Like, you know, it's just these online trolls. You best sort of just ignoring them, you know. And, you know, I think it's, you know, it's a bit sad to see, because the same people would never come up to your face or anything like that and just or tell you anything that they'd say online, but they'd go online and say some, you know, very, very horrible things. So, you know, I think it is a problem. But as time's going on, I think it is, people are starting to recognise it as a problem, and as more awareness comes to the issue, I think it's starting to slow down a little bit.
Has your dad ever spoken to you about the spar he had with Gary Ablett down at Geelong?
Yeah, he doesn't really like boxing anymore. He doesn't really talk about boxing, or he doesn't really like reminisce all that much. Be honest with you, he's never spoke to me about it, but I have seen it on YouTube, and it's got like hundreds of thousands. Like, because we own all the big media, boxing media publications on Facebook and online. We bought them up when we were like real young, because I sort of seen that the future was going that way, as opposed to all the older blokes, you know, the 60-year-old promoters, they would try and do the traditional stuff, get on network TV, big billboards on the side of the freeway, physical posters. I understood that it wasn't, that was, you know, that's dinosaur stuff. We're now getting into the world of soft media, as we call it. You know, we basically, bought up all those Facebook pages, and someone sent the Gary Ablett and my dad spar to me, and we put it up online, and it got hundreds of thousands of views. And it looked like it was good. Like, Ablett looked like he had a bit of hands.
Well, that's
like,
what I was just going to ask you. If your dad, you know, they said, well, he could handle himself, Ablett, or all the Abletts could box.
Yeah.
Anyway, he didn't muck around, Ablett, and he hit your dad. I just wondered whether your dad said, yeah, this bloke, because apparently it really did step up a notch.
Yeah, it did, and my dad was bombing him. Like, he started throwing hooks, and Ablett was ripping into uppercuts.
Yeah.
It looked quite intense, but you got to remember, my dad's a featherweight. Like, he's 57 kilos.
I understand.
And Ablett's probably, what, 100?
Yeah, give or take.
You know, so, and it's just a bit of fun. Like, you know, my dad's probably been in, you know.
Okay, I thought he might have said something about it.
No, he hasn't really mentioned that. But my dad's had 115 fights.
Too many.
Yeah, but you talk to him, he's got all his wits about him. Yeah, like, his words don't slur, like maybe a tiny little slur, but, you know, it's probably from the alcohol as well. He was pretty heavy on the piss, you know, so, you know, but he's got his wits about him.
The other thing that fascinates me about Australian boxing, why haven't we produced more heavyweights? We seem to produce the lighter or the smaller fighter.
Well, it's just not our real, like, size. Like, if you look at your average Aussie, I suppose, compared to your average, American or a guy, someone from like New Zealand, heavyweights are rich.
The big Maoris and the big African Americans,
Tongans, Samoans, you know, anyway, even from New Zealand, all those guys, they just breed them. Like, naturally, their genetics are a lot bigger, you know, whereas Australians, the average Australian.
What's the Muslim lads called?
Oh, yes, he's an up-and-comer. He was going to go to the Olympics. Heavyweight, he said, Muslim. No, I'm not.
Yes. Muslim, oh.
Come on.
He fought heavyweight.
Heavyweight Australian. He was going to go to the Olympics.
Yeah, he's a Muslim.
Justice Hooney?
Yes,
Justice
that's him.
Oh, yeah.
Is he a contender? Contender?
Yeah, definitely going to be. He's been training with Justin Fortune.
Yeah, Justin Fortune, who's the best Aussie trainer based in LA, good friend of Anthony's. And he's been boxing over there, and he just beat Paul Gallen. Is that the kid you're talking about?
Yes.
The one that stopped Gallen?
Yeah. I thought he didn't.
Yeah, he stopped Gallen in round 10.
Yes.
He's great. Yeah, no, he's good. But early days, mate. He only had 5 pro fights.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You know, you need to have a lot more than that. But at the moment, you couldn't really be on a better path. But we obviously had Lucas Brown. He went and won a world title over in Russia. Unfortunately,
Lucas Brown, what in the heavyweight?
Yeah, he's the one that Gallen knocked out in a round. Remember that big?
Yes, bald guy, that's right. They call him Daddy, Big Daddy.
Big Daddy.
We called him Big Mummy after that.
But unfortunately, he got done with clenbuterol in his system, which is so dodgy because you're a heavyweight. Why would you have clenbuterol? So you know, it didn't make any sense. But you know, again, things that happen in Russia and Germany.
Those American, the black fighters in America, were they on the gear? Because, geez, they were ripped. You know, going back to
they're not just genetics
because
they're not in their fast twitch muscle fibers.
Yeah, but you got to remember, mate, they get drug tested harshly, especially once you win a world title. Once you win a world title, not only do the board make you go through drug testing, but the sanctioning body. I don't know about years ago, but I'm talking since I've been around the last sort of 10, 15 years. There might be some substances that get, you know, they've worked out that gets under the radar, but they
Jesus,
go
Evander vicious. Holyfield, did he look good when he was in shape? Shit, he was the epitome of...
Yeah, but that's hard work. Yeah, look into Holyfield, mate, he's a religious guy that, you know, lives and breathes it, lives a healthy life. You know, and does all the right things, you know. So he puts the hard work in, and that's...
So Paul Gallen and Sonny Bill Williams and Barry Hall, the flavours of the month as far as celebrities are going, they get a good quid out of this, so they wouldn't be doing it, would they?
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Like, I know Gallen, roughly what he got paid against that Justice Hooney, and it wasn't 6 figures. It was more.
Really?
Yes.
Give us a round.
Well, it's got to be in the millions.
I'd say at least $1 million for sure.
Wow.
Yeah.
And of course, that's why he does it.
Yep.
What would they get paid for it? He says it openly.
Yeah. Paul Gallen says, I do it for the money.
He does say that.
So, and I know, you know, Barry Hall versus Gallen, that would have made big, big money. And even tonight, Sonny Bill, like, you know, these guys aren't fighting for free.
He's not a bad fighter, Barry Hall.
Barry Hall, the best of them all was Anthony Mundine. Like, you're never going to see a better crossover star than him. He was sensational. No one likes him or whatever. No,
I like him. I got on very well with him.
But, mate, like, he's a gentleman. You know, like, obviously, like I said, he boxed my dad in 2002. So I was basically a fan of his ever since then. And, you know, always a gentleman. But skills and, like, for what he achieved, to think that, because I don't know much about the rugby and what he did in there, but I've heard that he's a superstar. Or he's very, very good. Yeah. And to think I know what he's done in boxing with no amateur experience, just turned straight pro. I think he had, like, 2 amateur fights, which is unheard of. Since the days of like Johnny Famichon, who only had a couple of amateur fights too. But you got to understand that, you know, you don't really get people that have like 2 amateur fights go to world titles and fill out stadiums. And I think by the end of it, they said he earned something like $40 million out of his boxing career. He's the 35th highest paid boxer of all time, Anthony Mundine. And he's the only boxer that had every one of his fights since debut on pay-per-view. And so you got to understand that, you know, his first fight, he got like $600K and he fought a spud.
Him and Danny Green, they fought...
Yep, twice.
Yeah, twice. Yep. Went to both those.
And I obviously know Danny real well. I've promoted with him.
He's a good man.
Down here. Yeah, mate, I've done his undercards every time he was in Melbourne. So, like, undercards meaning, like, I put the fighters on the prelims. That was obviously for Australian boxing, that rivalry kept boxing alive sort of like in the, like, you know, early 2000s to sort of like 2012-ish. And I know they box again in 2017, but by then they were sort of older.
And you'd definitely say that Manny Pacquiao was beaten by Jeff. You'd definitely say Horn beat him, wouldn't you?
100%.
Yeah, because I remember Teddy Atlas came out here from the States, and I was quite a fan of Teddy Atlas, though he never shuts up when he's commentating. Mm. Just speaks for the whole, speaks shit for the whole round, for the whole match about.
That was sad. Just,
that was and really he sad, he yeah. said, "Oh, it was a disgrace." I said, "And I'm not serious? A great devotee of boxing, but you can see if someone's doing pretty well." And I thought Jeff Horn actually beat him, he went berserk, silly Teddy Atlas, and I lost all respect.
Didn't he lose his commentating gig after that?
Yeah, he sure did. He saw his last two or three were really distasteful, and they just cut him off the air pretty much. And I think they deserve it. I think he lost his marbles a bit. Way he was screaming, it's like. Like at worst, like what did you score it, Teddy?
That's right.
Like at worst, it would have been close.
Yeah.
So for you to go lose your top, blow your top, and no, it's like, mate, how many times we've been over internationally and we've had a rough decision because of fighting the local boy or whatever. But don't get me wrong, I don't think it was a rough decision. I think Jeff Horn won easily 8 rounds of that fight.
So did I. I'm glad you said that because he annoyed me so much.
Was Jeff Horn a fat fighter at the end? In other words, He'd reached the peak and he just couldn't be bothered putting in the hard yards.
Michael Zrafa after, like Michael Zrafa, you know, pulled him up and, you know, give him an honest belting. And then they rematch and then Horn just managed to scrape through and then he got completely annihilated by Tim Zhu. But again, what you were saying before about the whole, you've won a world title, you've got the millions, your family's set for life. It's very hard to get motivated and especially at that level, those, 12 round fights that are just brutal on the body against top contenders in the world, you know, and his style is take one to give three, so he takes a lot of punishment.
Took three punches to give one.
Take one to give three, so you know, well, that would be the plan. So what I'm trying to say is he took a lot of contact, and unfortunately when you got that style, like someone like a Barry Michael or something like that, where you walk onto shots, you're not really moving your head, or you know, you're not getting behind the jab, and you sort of you almost need it to be high actioned and high paced to suit you and your style and your rhythm, you know. So you know, he did take a lot of contact, and naturally when you take that type of contact, you know, your career does shorten, you know.
Now boys, this has been absolutely fantastic. Now, and Tony Topic, who is a fashion model in
boxing, one to ask.
All right, Donald. Well, I'm just saying, we're Antoni Topic, who's a fashion model and a boxer, and we're just going to wonder when this new series is coming out, Antoni. When is that?
I
can't say.
You can say when it's coming out.
I think it's going to come out around like August, September.
Yeah, I see, and it's going to be on one of the free-to-air networks.
Yes, and it'll be on a couple of big streaming services around the world as well.
There we are.
Around the world.
Yes.
And how many?
This could be big for you.
Yeah, and how many other? Off, yeah. How many other?
Johnny, shut up! This could be big for you.
They reckon 100 million audience.
Yeah.
And sorry, Don.
So for boxing or modelling?
Nah, this is for his TV show because he just got back. He got back 3 days, a day before our event, so that would have been Friday. Today's Wednesday, so 5 days ago.
Hmm.
He just got back. He was there for 6 weeks filming it.
And how many other celebrities are on it? Well, how many people are on it?
I think there's about 32.
32.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Well, this will be exciting, Don. And so you were going to ask another boxing question.
Boxing, I don't know if you boys remember, you're too young. There's a bloke that used to fascinate me. I watched him when he started in England. He went to America. I don't know whether it was a show pony or could box.
Prince Nazim.
He's
one of our favourite of all time, Don.
Yeah, he's so entertaining. And
I understand that, but could he... He was a bloody show off, and I was waiting for his head to get knocked off.
One thing
you've got to
understand about any sport, well, not really any sport, I take that back, because like footy, there used to be characters, and now it's not really characters anymore. It's more like you don't have those individual characters. Whereas in boxing, unfortunately, you can't just throw on a jersey with the two colours on it and pick up all those fans. Like if I play for Essendon, I'm an Essendon player, I'm getting all the Essendon fans. Unfortunately, with boxing, it's just you. So you got to understand that it's entertainment as well, and you got to know how to entertain the crowd and be exciting, or else.
So he got spanked, didn't he?
Marcus Antonio Barrera,
because he was showboating a bit, and
that was his style. Like he'd done heaps of showboating, and he was very successful in it. You know, but there was one fight, but he went like 35-0, and he only lost one. And that guy he lost to was Barrera, who's an all-time legend. And a famous Aussie fought him as well by the name, an Aboriginal boxer named Robbie Peden. He boxed Barrera as well, and Barrera, give him the work as well. Like, Barrera is a legend, one of the all-time greatest Mexican fighters. Mm. So, you know, to lose to him on points isn't like the end of the world. And out of 40 fights, if you only lost one, you've done pretty well. And I know he earned £8 million, and that was back then, before he's left England.
Really?
So imagine how much money he ended up with at the end of it. So again, understanding how to tap into and be entertaining and get those fans, you get better fights for more money. So easier fights for more money. If you can't really promote yourself, you've got to take the harder fights for less money. That's how it works. You've got to fight your way to the top. But what's beautiful about boxing is, if you keep winning, you will get to the money, guaranteed. It doesn't matter if you're liked, it doesn't matter anything. If you keep winning, it will be worthwhile to you. Whereas other sports, it's almost like who you know, not how good you are. Or, you know, if you've got the right contacts, you'll get favors. Though don't get me wrong, in boxing, it's the same. Like I just told you, if you have a big support, the promoters will look after you more. However, if you keep winning, it doesn't matter who you are, you will get into the money and you will get a shot.
Well, now, Don, Jake's dad must be very proud of him, because Jake Ellis is a articulate, smart operator, and it's been a pleasure to speak to him. And Tony Topic, you're a star as well, mate. Not often we sit opposite fashion models in Milan and Versace and go on to celebrity television shows.
Well, I reckon
shows,
you boys
that is.
Could have been back in your day. You could have been out. Yeah, fashion models.
He was. He was bigger than big.
No, really? Bullshit.
Oh, the menswear. What was it? Big no, man store.
Bullshit.
Out in Fitzroy. No, Fitzroy.
No, are they still around?
I want to thank you very much for coming in. It was fascinating. We didn't quite know really what to ask you, but we've found that we couldn't stop asking you questions in the end about your respective careers. So thank you very much, Jake Ellis.
Thank you, and
Tony Topic.
Thank you, fellas. It was an absolute pleasure and honor.
Here we go.
I'm open around the streets late at night. I'm worried because you ain't